This is Digital Story Podcast number 759, October 6, 2020. Today's theme is, Should You Create a Photography Budget? I'm Derek Story. Photography gear should not be an impulse buy, especially when that decision sends a $2,500 charge to your credit card. By the same token, new gear helps keep us motivated and creating new images. So how do we balance these two forces? My argument is an approved photography budget, and I'll explain why on today's TDS podcast. After the first week of shooting with the Nikon Z5 mirrorless camera with its 24 to 50 millimeter compact zoom lens, and compact it is for a full frame, I started asking myself, where can I reasonably come up with the $1,700 to buy this kit? And you may recall that I talked about this camera a few weeks ago on the podcast, and I really liked it. I did. I was so impressed with the images that I was making from the Eastern Sierra and Lake Tahoe with this camera that I thought, man, you know, this would be good to have access to all the time. All the time. You know, it's not too heavy. The compact 24 to 50 millimeter lens was performing really beyond my expectations. And I already have lots of Nikon glass that I could use with an adapter. I don't have the Z mount glass. I would just have the 24 to 50 if I bought the kit. But I have all sorts of F-mount stuff. I have Nikon G lenses, and I could get their adapter and use all of that with this camera. So I was very, very tempted. It was the first full-frame camera that I had shot with in a long time that not only did I like the camera itself, not only did I enjoy shooting with it, I loved the images, and I felt like it was a manageable camera to have with me when I'm hiking and doing things outdoors. So now we fast forward 3 weeks later, and I'm boxing up the Nikon Z5 and attaching the shipping label to return it to B&H Photo, who had let me use it for a month for review purposes. So by this point, I was okay sending it back. I didn't want to, but it was the right decision. So I went from, you know, that first week just really being infatuated with it, wanting to hang on to it. I still want to hang on to it. But over the course of the next 3 weeks, I got to the point to where I could send it back, you know, pretty much like I was supposed to. So how did I get from point A to point B, right? Where now I can look you straight in the mic and say, I'm okay sending it back. I really am. Here's how. Because that $1,700 plus probably another $400 for accessories, and especially I was going to need, you know, the adapter so I could use my F-mount lenses, that was not in my 2020 photography budget. In fact, you know, we're only in October, and I have less than $700 left to spend. So, back to New York, the Z5 goes. Now, that wasn't the only factor, and I'll explain a little bit more about that, but it was definitely a factor. You know, I have done my budget ahead of time. I do it about this time of year for the next year. I have made some very good purchases that I'm in love with, and I have $700 left, and the Z5 just doesn't fit in that tiny little window of $700. Doesn't even come close. So the funny thing is, even though on one level I hate them, I'm a big fan of budgets, right? You know, I guess it is the ultimate love-hate relationship. You know, I have an overall budget for the business, you know, and I run that monthly. And that's for the overall business. And then I have a breakout budget, especially for gear. And that's more what I'm talking about today. And then I create budgets for trips as well. Well, at least I did until about 6 months ago. And I haven't created any of those lately at all. I wonder why. I do the photography budget because it protects me from me. I know how easily a new camera or a new lens can turn my head. I know that about me. I do. So easily, in fact, that I usually have to create a pros and cons list in addition to a budget to reach a sound decision. I'll give you some examples. Earlier this year, I wanted to buy the OMD EM1 Mark III, right? I had it on loan. I loved shooting with it. You know, I went to Costa Rica with it. I had it with me in Costa Rica, along with some lenses. And I was truly impressed with this camera. And I'm already shooting Olympus. It was $1,800 then when I first resisted. And now, even worse for me, you can get one for $1,400. You can get the EM1 Mark III for $1,400. That is a good value, I'm telling you right now. But, you know, that's still twice as much as my remaining $700 in my budget. To tell you the truth, this is where that pros and cons list comes in as well. I really can't justify it because my Mark II is still an amazing camera. That thing has been producing great images for such a long time, continues to do so. And here's another thing. I'm currently without photo assignments. I don't have photo assignments right now, so I'm not making any money with the cameras. I'm having to make money doing other things. And so my cameras aren't generating any revenue. So if I have a perfectly good, really fantastic Mark II, and I don't have any photo assignments, it's really hard, really hard to justify the Mark III. Now, a good litmus test for this, and I'm going to drill down a bit more on this when I get into some finer points here, is practice explaining to someone else. There doesn't have to be anyone there, but practice explaining to someone else why, without any photography assignments and without enough money in the budget and a perfectly good Mark II, why you need to have the Mark III. And just say it out loud. You know, just say it out loud to the wall or whatever, to the cat. My cats are really good listeners, and they look at me. And even on that one, you know, Dibs kind of scowled a little bit and go, you know, I really don't know, Derek. That argument is not winning me over. That's one example. Here's another example. And this actually came out the same time as the Mark III, which is that Olympus, that 12-45 f4 pro lens. I also got to shoot with that in Costa Rica. And that lens is fabulous. It's so small and so light, yet it is very sharp. The color is great with it. It close focuses. It looks good. I mean, it is a nice lens. And now you can get it for $549. It was $649 when it first came out. It's $549 right now. And that is a lens that I think I would leave on the camera. I would just leave it there. As you know from my discussion about lenses last week, that I have the, you know, the pancake zoom on the cameras right now. You know, that's sort of the lens I leave on all of them. However, I could leave this 12-45 on my EM1 Mark II, and that's definitely an upgrade in terms of image quality, and it has, you know, covers a wider range. It focuses closer. It's a pro lens, so it's weather sealed, all that stuff. So that one's a little easier to justify. And I'm thinking that if that lens is still available for around $500 come late November, then I might use the rest of my budget on that. So that one is still in the running. That one is a little bit easier to justify. So here's the point that I'm trying to make right now, is that making photography budgets, I think that brings rational conversations to gear acquisition. Now, that conversation could be with the wall or the cat, or it could be just with yourself. You get what I'm saying here. But you've also just heard all the sort of things that I weigh as I go through this process, and the budget is a big part of it. Because if the numbers weren't involved at all in this discussion, if I was just saying, hey, I already got an EM1 Mark II, do I really need an EM1 Mark III? And you're kind of going back and forth. And if money isn't a factor, then, well, that's a little different discussion. Because you go, well, I'll use the EM1 Mark II as a backup camera, we're really good at coming up with reasons why to do things that we want to do, right? And that's just not limited to photography either. So, having that photography budget, having that number, I think gives a little bit more weight to, the rational discussion. Doesn't just make it the sort of thing where we can just start, willy-nilly coming up with reasons why to do something that we already want to do. Another reason why I'm bringing this up right now is that this is a great time, if you like this idea, this is a great time to be doing it, is creating your budget now for 2021. And this is the time of year that I normally do that sort of stuff. And I have a process that I use to kind of go through it. The first thing I want to try to figure out is, how much money do I anticipate that I'll have for investing in gear? And that's sort of based on, all right, how much revenue is coming in? What are my fixed expenses? What are my overhead? What do I think might be unanticipated expenses? So you have to sort of anticipate the things that you don't know about, and kind of, do a little bit of budget work there. And budgets are always kind of like that, aren't they? There's some factual information, and then there's a little bit of crystal ball work. All right. So I work on that, and then that lets me know, okay, I think there's going to be about this much money available for reinvesting into new gear. And then I take that number and I take 30% out. And the reason why I take 30% out is because experience has taught me that's about how much money of unanticipated things, show up during the year. Things that I just, like, one year, the toilet up, you probably don't even want to know this, but it's an example that comes to my mind first because it really hurt. The toilet upstairs here at the studio started leaking, and my water bill went way up. And I was going, oh my God, my water bill went way up. And it took me a while to figure out because it wasn't a leak that I could hear. And I did the dye test. You know how those things go. Put a little bit of dye in there. And oh my God, it shows up in the bowl. You put it in the tank, shows up in the bowl. And you go, I got a leaky toilet. So I have the plumber come out. And I'm thinking, okay, I can probably get this fixed for like $150. The plumber comes out and he goes, no. Toilet is shot, and he actually shows me why it's shot. It's not anything fixed. He goes, you need a new toilet if indeed you don't want to have this leak anymore. And that whole new toilet project cost me $700. All right, that's an example of the kind of stuff that comes up that there's no way I could anticipate that I'd be replacing a toilet. There it is, and you have to pay for it, right? And, we're all grown-ups and we all know about these things that happen. So that's why whatever amount I come up with that I think I can reinvest in gear, I take 30% out, hopefully not for another toilet, but, for things like that happens. Okay. So then I have, a number. Then I have a number, okay, at this point. Now, I have a tip for those of you that have other people in your financial life. Right. And, it could be all sorts of, it could be, a business partner. It could be a husband or a wife. It could be, anyone, that has a financial interest in your life. Once you have your photography gear budget figured out, do your pitch to whomever has some input on your finances. And the reason why I like doing this is because you limit this conversation to one conversation for the whole next year. It's just one conversation you have to have about the budget. And, you've already thought it through. You've got your numbers. You have some gear that you're anticipating. And you have that one discussion. Once you get that approved or buy-in or however it works in your situation, then you're done. Then you're done with that discussion because now you have the money approved, so to speak, for the entire next year. And so you don't have to, you know, answer the question, where did that camera come from? Oh, this camera? You don't want to have any of that. I mean, that stuff is so awkward and uncomfortable. And then you just go, yeah, it was in the budget and it cost this amount. And I really like it and I'm using it a lot. And yay. So have that discussion and just get it out of the way. And then you don't even have to think about it again for the whole next year. All right. And here's another tip. Once you've arrived at that number and once you have buy-in and all that kind of stuff, then have a separate account and start funding that as soon as you can. So every time you get a little extra money, you know, one place or another, or a little something, start funding that account, because having that money ahead of time will save you money. And I'll give you a perfect example. I buy a lot of things through B&H, and they have the PayBoo program there. And what that means is that, you know, you get pre-approved ahead of time through PayBoo. Once you're approved, so let's say that I buy a camera. Let's say I bought that EM1 Mark III, which isn't as likely. So let's say I buy the lens, okay, which is more likely. So I spend $550 on that lens. If I use PayBoo through B&H, that credit line, I don't have to pay the tax. B&H will pay the tax for me, and the shipping's free. So whatever the number is on the catalog page, that's all I pay. Now, when the bill comes the next month, then if I have the money in the bank, then I just pay the bill with the money in the bank, and I'm done. I've basically got that item without having to pay sales tax and without having to pay shipping, because I could pay the entire thing off in that 30-day cycle. And you make out much better on that than even if you pay cash, right? Because if you pay cash, you'd still have to pay the sales tax for wherever you live. This way, you skirt the sales tax altogether, no sales tax, no shipping, and then the next month when the bill comes, pay it out of the money that you have saved. It is really a great system, and that adds up. That adds up. I mean, some places have 8, 9, even 9.5% sales tax. That $2,500, the sales tax is a substantial number, and not having to pay it is really, really sweet. So create that separate account, start funding it right away, you know, get as much money in there as you can, because that will save you money when it comes time to start making these purchases. My new camera for this year, for 2020, was the Fujifilm X100V. And as you know, from having listened to me talk about it on the podcast and write about it, you know, I love that camera. That is, I think, that is the camera where Fujifilm got everything right. You know, it's funny, Zeiss announced their camera today, actually, I think. You know, I'm recording this on Monday. And that's the camera with the 35 millimeter f2 Zeiss lens. And then it has this very kind of futuristic looking body and hardly any dials or buttons at all. Mostly touchscreen operated, but, you know, it works in concert with Lightroom. So for those of you that use Lightroom Mobile, it's a camera that basically can connect directly to your account. Really interesting camera with a 35 millimeter f2 Zeiss lens. $6,000 is how much it's going to cost. $6,000. This is a full frame camera. Okay, so, you know, there you go. It's a full frame camera. My X100V also has a 35 millimeter f2 lens, APS-C sensor, but a beautiful one, a great one, with all the Fujifilm film simulations and everything else. Really refined camera, beautifully made, lots of dials, lots of, you know, you can control almost everything, you know, without having to go to the LCD screen. Tilting LCD screen, not too big, $1,400. $1,400 for the X100V, $6,000 for the full-frame Zeiss with the 35mm f2. I'm just saying that I feel really good about my purchase. I really do. It's all paid for. It's all mine. And I'm looking forward to being as good at this next year as I was in 2020, because I really like the way I spent the money in my budget this year. I feel very good about it. I'm already working on my budget for next year, and I'm hoping I follow my own advice and am just as smart and feel as good in October of next year as I do in October of this year. So anyway, that's my pitch for a photography budget. I just think that it really brings some true sanity to the conversation, and I think it will help you make the best purchases possible for yourself, along with some of these other tips. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you think. I'm going to post this on the Facebook page, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Panasonic doesn't expect Olympus owners to switch to its products. This is a fascinating little piece. I found it on Petapixel today, and I have the link to it in the show notes. And by the way, I have links to everything I talked about in the previous segment in the show notes too, all the cameras and all the lenses and everything. So, you know, make sure you go there if you want to follow up on any of this stuff. Let me just read you a little bit from this article, though, because, you know, it really got me thinking, and this is something that I do want your input on, Olympus owners. In the wake of Olympus's final deal with Japan Industrial Partners to assume control of the company's imaging business, Panasonic apparently isn't very hopeful that many of Olympus Micro Four Thirds photographers will make the jump over to Panasonic camera equipment. You know, they think that they're basically, and there's the official statement there, but it was kind of a rough translation. I didn't really like it, and really did not want to have to stumble through it on the air. But basically, Panasonic thought that Olympus owners would either hang on to the gear that they have right now, just milk it as long as they can, or, you know, wait and see what's going to happen with a JIP, or, you know, switch over to a full frame camera or something different. So they thought that they would do just about anything other than buy one of their Micro Four Thirds cameras, which I'm curious. I mean, I really want to hear from you on this. So let me read you some more from the article. Panasonic has for years seen its positioning of Micro Four Thirds as complementary to that of Olympus rather than as a direct competitor. While Olympus excels at image quality and technological advances in still image photography, Panasonic has spent the lion's share of its energy in video capture, and I think that's a very true sentence. Panasonic expanded out of the Micro Four Thirds market with this S series of cameras, which both diversified and bolstered its camera line, while Olympus remained set in its ways with a recommitment to Micro Four Thirds. It's possible to see that refusal to expand as a reason for Olympus needing to bow out of the image marketing entirely, but Panasonic has repeatedly informed us that it does not intend to abandon Micro Four Thirds. And while Panasonic has released several full-frame cameras since its last flagship Micro Four Thirds body, the company will still to this day strongly throw its support behind the format if asked. Based on what Panasonic is thinking, it kind of got me thinking about it. Those of you who shoot Olympus, are you tempted by Panasonic camera bodies? Are you looking at their camera bodies for your next camera body? Are you going to wait and see what happens with a JIP? You know, what you're thinking there. I find it fascinating that Panasonic believes that Olympus people won't even, you know, really consider Panasonic for their next Micro Four Thirds purchase. I don't use Panasonic bodies per se. I've had a few of them and they kind of come and go. I prefer Olympus bodies, but I do have some Panasonic lenses that I absolutely adore. And as many of you know, one of them is the 20mm f1.7. I love that lens. And I also have the Panasonic 12 to 35 f2.8 zoom lens. And I bought that lens before Olympus had, you know, kind of their version of the 12 to 40. And to this day, I still love that lens too. So I'm not against Panasonic at all, and I would continue to look at Panasonic. I would look at everything. Maybe that's just what I do. Let me know. You know, again, this story is going to be on the Facebook page. Maybe I'll create a little bit of a poll or something there to make it easy. But I want to know, those of you who shoot Olympus, are you looking at Panasonic at all, or is Panasonic right about this? If they are, I find that fascinating. The online Eastern Sierra Photography Workshop. And this is coming up. The 2 days that we're hanging out together is going to be on November 6th and November 7th, 2020. But we're actually going to start with the assignments and stuff in October. October 21st is when we're going to start with the assignments. And I brought this up last week. And the main thing, the main point that I wanted to make last week was that if you miss working with other photographers, because that's one of the real strengths of the physical workshops, I have to tell you. I would like to think that you're coming out to see me, but I know better. You're coming out to hang out with the other photographers, right? What I'm trying to do and what I'm really focusing on with this online version is to build as many things into it that scratches that same itch, because I think that's important. And I think especially after, you know, months and months and months of us, you know, being isolated from other photographers, it's more important than ever to sort of figure that out. So this is a component that I'm trying to bring into the online version. And if you want to be a part of the maiden voyage of this, you know, we still have a couple seats open. And all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com. And you can sign up for it right there. It's only $150 for the whole thing. You can sign up for it. I'm keeping the group small because I still want that personal experience, just like our physical workshops. You're going to have the opportunity, if you wish, to share images with the class and get feedback on them from other photographers. And we're going to have ongoing conversations beyond the event itself, because I'm setting up this workshop community online, that once you attend a workshop, you're part of that community going forward. Now, we'll have our individual groups, you know, each workshop will have an individual group, but then I'm going to have an overall group for all the workshop folks to hang out. And that is an ongoing resource. So, you know, 6 months from now, if you're going somewhere and you want some advice from other folks that you know have been there or that you suspect have been there, then you have that community available to you. And it's not, you know, just willy-nilly like so many things are online. These are folks that have participated in one of our workshops and, you know, are part of the community that you belong to. I just think that this is something really cool. I hope you can join me if you're thinking about it. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. First of all, I want to thank our Patreon members. And it's funny, I've had something come up now a couple times recently. And whenever something comes up more than once, or definitely more than three times, I feel like I should talk about it on the show. So our Patreon members, to be an Inner Circle member, you know, what you do is you go to the website, the digital story, you click on the Patreon tile, takes you over to our site, right? We have a site there, and that's where we do our stuff, right? And if you're a member, everything's visible to you. If you're not a member yet, then you get a feel for what's going on, but you know, you have to become a member to see everything that's going on. And in order to do that, it's $5 a month to become an Inner Circle member. And I've had some folks say, hey, are there other tiers beyond the $5 a month thing? And I'm going, well, no, I mean, you can pledge as much as you want per month. You could do $10 a month. You just enter $10 instead of $5. You're still an Inner Circle member. But I was thinking, I would like to come up with a tier that, you know, maybe is beyond $5. And I've been thinking about that, and I just haven't totally figured it out yet. In the meantime, if you feel moved to do more than $5, please do. And when I do figure it out, you will automatically be added to that. But it just felt really good for folks to say, can I give more? I mean, that is something that you really like hearing when you're sitting here in my chair. Okay. So those of you that have brought it up, thank you so much. Thank you for even thinking that, even if you don't do it. Alrighty. Inner Circle members, though, I mean, they are privileged to discounts. They get things that are just for them, and they get the good feeling for helping to support this community. It's a win-win-win all the way around. And thank you so much, all of you who are Inner Circle members. If you want to join us, again, just go to any page of the digital store, click on the Patreon tile that's there, and you can check it out and hopefully join us. All the links that I have in the show notes that take you to camera gear on B&H or on Amazon, those are affiliate links. And if you want to, for instance, get the Nikon Z5, which I think is an excellent value for the money, if you would go to the digital story first and either click on the link that's in the show notes for the Nikon Z5, click on the B&H tile or click on the Amazon tile, which wherever you prefer to shop. If you do that first, then those are all affiliate. And then you just do your shopping, do your searching, do whatever you're going to do. And that helps support this podcast. Those of you that are doing that extra step, thank you so much. It adds up. It's a very small percentage, but it adds up because photography equipment, as we just finished talking about, is expensive. So, you know, I get a few hundred of you using that link in the course of a month, and it helps support the show. And I truly, truly appreciate it. It doesn't cost you anything more, but it sure helps us out on this end of the mic. And finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper, the longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. The nicest folks in the paper business out there in Texas. Oh my gosh, they are so good at what they do, aren't they? Those of you that have interacted with Red River Paper, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And again, I'm going to start bringing up what I brought up last week, which is, you know, we're getting to that time of year where you probably want to start making some fine art greeting cards. You probably want to start making some prints and putting them in frames. You want to start doing this stuff so that you have it ready as the holidays approach, because the holidays for a lot of people are just a crazy time, and this year might be crazier than usual. And if you have your fine art cards made and if you have some prints made and stuff, believe me, you will thank me. You will thank me at some point in December. You'll go, Derek, thank you for telling me to get going back in October. All you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of Digital Story. That'll take you to our landing page at Red River Paper. Get yourself some paper. Get yourself some fine art cards. Get yourself some envelopes. Even if you want to be fancy pants, get some glassine sleeves to put the envelope in and really make it look nice. All of that at Red River Paper, plus tutorials, plus reviews, and you can even get ink for your Canon and Epson printers. Longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. Have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. Thank you so much, Red River Paper, and let's get to making some art. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. It's fun stuff, right? You never thought that budgets could be fun, but when you're making a budget for photography gear, it's fun. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Come back and join me. Until then, stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.